very important for conservative success. Our next speaker is a man that is a very close personal friend of mine. I've known for going on 7, 8 years, something like that, if not longer. He is a native of Indianapolis. He was a very successful business executive in our city, and in early 1969, Governor Whitcomb of Indiana appointed him to become chairman of our State Public Service Commission, a capacity in which he performed very nobly indeed. He since has been appointed by President Nixon to be a member of the Postal Rate Commission in Washington, and he has been for the past several months attempting to come to grips with the problems of the federal bureaucracy. He therefore, I think, has a very good insight into problems of government, the practical difficulties of making conservative principle operative both at the state and federal level. Would you please welcome Mr. John L. Ryan.
Thank you, Stan. I enjoyed your remarks. I want to say just as a caveat to begin with that I'm not permitted to say anything about the Postal Rate Commission. They have problems and rules and regulations in Washington which are kind of unique for Hoosier politicians about conflict of interest. In Indiana, we have never felt that this is any problem. We've always realized that our own interest always came first, and therefore there has never been any conflict. I think of myself, by way of perhaps further background with respect to my remarks, as being a professional politician. I don't think the politician side of it is subject to any particular question. The professionalism might be. I've been a member of more death wagon rides in the Indiana political scene since 1955 than almost anyone except about a dozen members of the Indiana Iron Guard who are here tonight and who've been along on every one of them. As a professional politician, I entered the Whitcomb administration as a political appointee. Now, people on public service commissions arrive there in a variety of ways, or think they do at any rate. But from a practical point of view, they, like all other appointees in government, whether at the state, local, or federal level, are political appointees. There may be merit systems and balanced boards and this sort of thing. But the background, the environment, the area in which you are expected to operate is political. And many people, when they get appointed, lose sight of this fact. This is a cause for much of the grief in the administration of both conservatives and, I presume, liberals, although I haven't studied it that much. That we experience today and have been experiencing, and particularly the state governments, for some time. I say particularly the state governments because we haven't had the experience for long or at the national level. My remarks tonight really, I suppose, boil down into essentially a series of cliches. They are old, but in my opinion, and I think it can be demonstrated, true. What I'm going to engage in is kind of a reminding process of telling you things which you already know, but perhaps haven't thought of for some time in relation to your government servants. The first cliche about government service is that it isn't service at all. The jobs, as I mentioned a while back, are political. They exist only because of politics. The worst type of government servant is the chap who really believes he is serving the people. This makes him discharge his political responsibilities badly, and in addition leads him into a sort of do-gooding status of intrusions into the freedom of the rest of the electorate, which really wasn't a part of his contract when he signed on. Don Cope, who is known to many of you, said, and it's one of the truest statements that I have ever heard, and it's indelibly imprinted on the back of my mind, that when in government you begin believing that what you are doing is important, you are in a heap of trouble. And this isn't cynical, it's accurate. Think of it from the point of view, those of who may be in government and who may have been in government, from what you thought about the people who are doing the job that you are now doing when you were out of government. And you know perfectly well that if you were taken out of the job and put back into the electorate again, you'd think that the fellow who was doing your job was wasting your money and operating in a political context and not serving the people. The second half of this is, it's kind of a corollary, equally important, and it sounds like the same thing, but it's not quite, is the danger of beginning to believe that not only is the job important, but that your being in that job is important. It's not of any special importance at all. Your being there may be of political importance, but it bears no relationship to reality with respect to your position in relation to the job. Now, this doesn't require any kind of kamikaze attitude, because you don't think of your being in that job as being particularly important, doesn't require that you strap grenades under your arm and run into the chairman and blow him up or anything of the sort. It doesn't even require that you go out and pick issues of which have some sort of conservative orientation just for the sake of picking a fight. But you can keep this position and operate with prudence, perhaps even conservatively. It has these two attitudes, which I think are the fundamental ones of so-called government service, keep you from straying too far from the conservative principles, which, in, as Dave so aptly pointed out, for us conservatives is what got us into government in the first place. It also helps to keep one's personal ambition within reasonable bounds. And this is another area where one can be terribly tempted to bend principles or rationalize changes in one's principles on this basis that I'm such a good guy, I'm so important to the movement, that I've got to stay around. I've got to maintain my position. I've got to advance. I've got to move into more important positions. And many good conservative careers, in my opinion, have foundered on this kind of combination of self-importance and personal ambition. When you go into office, appointee office, incidentally, I should have said to begin with, and I meant to, I'm not speaking for elected officials tonight, because I think they have quite a different, or maybe I am, they have a somewhat different problem. When you're going to take your job, you should have your basic principles firmly in mind, and not just in general terms. I think it's necessary because there are a great many temptations, there are a great many pressures, there are a great many incentives to change. You should have your basic principles firmly in mind and change them, if at all, only with great deliberation. Now, you may have to violate those principles, but you violate them within the rules of the game, and I'm going to speak about the rules of the game in just a few minutes. Or you do it for obvious political purposes, but know you're doing it. Don't try and rationalize that somehow what you're doing is conservative, when in fact it isn't conservative at all. So there's probably nothing that hurts the movement more than that. I said a minute ago that you are playing a game when you work for the government. And if you take my basic thesis that the job is not important, it bears much the same relationship to real life that any game does. There are rules. The rules have no necessary relationship to the real world at all, any more than the rules of golf bear relationship to the real world. Now, there are two types of rules. One of them are statutory, essentially statutory rules, laws or things which are close to laws. You've got to know those rules, and those are the rules of the game. One other thing that you have to look out for is that people who've been there a long time will tell you things are rules which aren't, in fact, rules at all, have no basis in the statutes, and in fact are fair game for areas of change and influence. For instance, as chairman of the Public Service Commission, you are restricting entry into every area that you regulate. This is abhorrent on principle to, I think, every conservative, certainly everyone who believes in the free marketplace. And I could get into a discussion of how monopolies aren't that much different than anything else. But the rules say that you restrict entry, and in fact, you must play the game, and so you do. In the case of Indiana, we set up a compromise between Hoosier Energy, which is an REMC, energy generating operation, and the private power companies. This was a political move and also a matter of practicality. But we did not confuse ourselves with thinking that we had come up with some kind of conservative solution to the impasse that had developed in Indiana. You can't play the game and break the rules, but you have to know what the rules are. From a practical point of view, try and use the rules to promote your principles. And this is not impossible. For instance, in the trucking industry, for a variety of reasons, largely low profitability, less than truckload shipments have become a liability to the established truck lines, which are protected by public service commissions. This gives the Public Service Commission an opportunity to bring new truck firms into competition who are willing to serve LTL customers. So by the perfectly legitimate use of the devices of the public service law, it is possible to increase competition and to get to something a good deal closer than the free market situation. A couple of passing thoughts in connection with these cliches. Realize when you go in that you're not going to reform the world. As a matter of fact, you probably won't even reform your own agency, even if you're the head of it. It's fine to try, but don't be impatient, and don't be discouraged if you don't get it done. Dave mentioned, I think, one of the most important considerations, and this is to support your conservative brothers in and out of government. Not only is it a matter of principle, but you may want help yourself sometime. It is terribly important that we help other conservatives who want to get into this national administration to do so. And there is a surprising amount, I believe, that can be done from just the brief experience which I've had in Washington so far. You can look for crypto conservatives already in the government. And surprisingly, I've found several. And they are legitimate. I've checked out their bona fides, and you can encourage them, and you can help them to advance. It's incredible. These guys have been sleeping around in that bureaucratic operation for 20, 25 years. I don't know how they've kept their cover. When you get the call for help, rally around if it's from a fellow conservative. Give him the benefit of the doubt, even though it may not look like a particularly conservative issue, or even one that you have much interest in at all. Give him the benefit of the doubt if you possibly can. Use the prestige and influence of your job to legitimatize particularly abstract conservative principles. We in the political business tend to concentrate on the practical side, and there's a good reason for this, and I'm not saying to neglect the practical, but frequently you run up against very difficult roadblocks when you're trying to change policy, when you're trying to switch economic orientation in a regulatory body, for instance. You can very easily, however, continue to talk up the more abstract conservative principles, which don't deal necessarily precisely with the problems of your agency, but which impinge on it from a theoretical point of view. I have a whole list of further cliches which I could give to you, but I think I've made the points which I've been trying to, and I don't want to take up too much time. I suppose to sum it up, a conservative going into government needs, first of all, and basically, intellectual honesty, the ability to know what he's there for, to know what his principles are, to know the practicalities of his assignment, both from the government point of view and from the point of view of his cause. Don't know what your principles are and violate them only for compelling reasons. Don't overestimate your own importance. And learn to recognize, help, and trust your brothers. Thank you.